This is Larry Baldassaro speaking with Susan Szymanski in Kenosha, Wisconsin on January 23, 2024. Susan is the former sports editor of the Racine Journal Times and is an inductee in the Wisconsin Newspaper Association Hall of Fame. This interview is for the Sabre Oral History Collection, and Susan, you've granted consent to do this interview, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Why don't we start by telling me a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, et cetera?
Okay. I grew up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and attended Kenosha Public Schools. I graduated from Kenosha Bradford High School, and I earned a scholarship to Marquette University and attended the School of Journalism for 2 years at Marquette. Then I transferred to the University of Wisconsin Parkside and finished there and graduated with honors with a Bachelor of Arts degree in mass communications with the print media in 1977.
Okay, and then where'd you go from there?
In terms of career?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I had actually started working part-time at the Journal Times in Racine while I was in college. And after I graduated from college, I decided to travel around the state and apply for jobs as a sports writer at various newspapers. And I came up empty there, so I continued working part-time at the Journal Times. I was working mostly on the weekend news copy desk and then also had occasional writing assignments on the news side. And I kept bugging the sports editor for a chance to work on the sports department and get some opportunities there. And then I did start getting some hours there and some assignments covering events and writing features and that. And after I graduated, I also worked a year for the University of Iowa Urban Community Research Center on a research project in Racine. Full-time position came open on the sports department. In the fall of 1978, I got the job.
Well, let me ask you, when did you know you wanted to be a journalist? And specifically, did you know from the start that you wanted to cover sports?
Yes, I did. As a kid growing up in Wisconsin, I was a Packer fan and a baseball fan. It was kind of hard not to be a Packer fan then because of the Packer glory years. And also from a pretty young age, I started reading newspapers. And we always got two newspapers in our house. And I used to take and cut out box scores and game stories, and I'd make scrapbooks every year for my teams. Write little summaries on each games and highlights. And I think that's kind of where the seed got planted. And I thought, hey, this is something that I'd like to do. You know, I can do this. Why not? And by the time I was 12 or 13, I knew that's what I wanted. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to study journalism, a sports reporter. And then in high school, I took a journalism class, paper, the newspaper in high school. And then also in college, I wrote for the college newspapers.
So when you tried to apply for positions in sports specifically, did you encounter any difficulties there?
Yeah, when I was going around state, my state tour, looking for a job, one of the newspapers that I had stopped at was the Green Bay Press Gazette. And I met with the sports editor and had given him my resume and writing and told him I wanted to apply for a job as a sports reporter. And he said, but you're a woman. And really caught me off guard because I had never even considered it before, and no one had ever said anything like that before. No, you know, none of my high school teachers ever said, well, that's not something you can't do because you're a woman. My parents certainly never, you know, discouraged me from wanting to do that. So it was quite a shock when somebody said, but you're a woman. But I know it was so rare in those days and people just weren't used to it. So I'm sure that was part of it, that he was surprised that a woman was applying to be a sports reporter. So,
presumably you didn't run into that issue when you got to the Racine Journal Times. How did that come about that you got into sports there?
Well, as I have said, I had worked, you know, time, and then they did start giving me some hours in sports and writing assignments and that. And I guess in a way I sort of owe a debt of gratitude to Joe in the fall of 1977. So this was after I had graduated from college and started to get some hours in sports. That was Namath was playing for him. That was late in his career. And they were playing the Packers in Milwaukee. That was back in the days when the Packers played three games a year at Milwaukee County Stadium.
Right.
So my sports editor assigned me to go and interview Namath and do a feature. And I think, although I'm not sure because it was never, I think they were kind of testing me and thought that, you know, there's no way she's going to get an interview with Joe Namath. So that would kind of knock her down a few notches. But so I, you know, did my homework, was all ready, went up to Milwaukee that Saturday before the game and waited for them to finish practice. And then the players were after practice to get on the bus back to the hotel. So I waited for Namath to come out, and he did. And there were a bunch of kids running up and getting autographs from him. And I went up and introduced myself, told him I wanted to interview. And he said, you know, I don't. And he kept walking towards the bus and kids signing autographs for the kids. I said, you know, I'd really like to, you know, just have a little bit of your time and interview you and for the story. And he kept saying, no, I really don't feel like doing this. And I kind of looked over my shoulder and saw we were getting bus and thought, all right, I better make my move. So I stood in front of him and grabbed his arm and I don't really want to do this either. Not going back without an interview. And I don't know if I just shocked him or what, but he said, well, all right, come over to the team hotel, give me about 20 minutes to get cleaned up and I'll talk to you. So I was like, all right. So I ran to my car and realized where the team hotel is. So I had to follow the bus to the hotel. And then I waited and kind of looked over my notes and that, and you know, waited about 20 minutes or so, and then went and called. And he said, all right, I'll be down to the lab. Came down and there was a restaurant at the hotel. Like, I don't remember which hotel it was, but so he said, well, why don't we go in there and talk? The interview lasted over an hour. We wound up talking for over an hour and had lunch. And interestingly enough, because I had Amos' book, I can't wait until tomorrow because I get better looking every day. And I kind of had an impression of him being a little bit of a, you know, very egotistical in that, which I think he probably was a little bit, but it actually turned out. So it was an enjoyable interview. And going back to the office, it was pretty fun to walk in and say to my sports editor, hey, I just had lunch with Joe Namath. So I think that kind of helped. And then when the, you know, job opening came up the following fall, I got the job. So,
well, that's quite a get for your first interview with a guy.
Yeah, and then the story, it was a, they had me do a Sunday feature for it because it was a big, you know, full page feature story on Joe Namath and his career and the end of his career. So,
when did you become a beat writer?
Well, at the early days, I pretty much did, you know, everything. You're a reporter, you work copy editing, layout, and I was doing all those. Then I actually had expressed interest in covering baseball early on. And I want to say by 1980, I started covering the Brewers on a regular basis. And then I also covered University of Wisconsin football. Mm. So I was doing the two of those starting in about 1980. And those were my two, like I should say, main professional college beats, and then also right. doing local sports. And
so do you recall the first time you actually entered a locker room, say with the Brewers? And what was that like?
I know when I first started was when they were having locker room access. And then with the Brewers, they were trying to had a policy where they would bring players up the concourse from the, you know, locker room after the games, but obviously not all the players would be willing to do that. And also because you're on deadline at that time after a game, that was a little bit difficult because I didn't have the same access to players after the game that the male reporters did.
What was the basis for that, for excluding you?
Well, just because I was a woman.
Really?
So it
was very explicit.
Right. But I mean, the Brewers were trying to accommodate me, you know, in the other way. But obviously they were at the mercy of the players and their schedules and that. So it did make it a little more difficult for me. And then because that was kind of happening on a national basis, the reporters and news media organizations were working with Major League Baseball to try to come up with a policy. And then that's when they eventually did come up with the open policy that they had to allow women reporters in the locker room, same as the men. So I can't say I remember the exact. I actually think I was pretty. Never really got hassled by the opposing teams would play tricks, not tricks, but, you know, would pull pranks on me and things like that and try to upset me. But the Brewers were pretty good about it. And they.
What you're talking about, pranks? What kind of pranks?
Oh, they would, like, when you would go in and be looking for a player to interview, they'd say, you know, oh, you know, he's over there, and they'd, you know, send you back into a closet or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hey. Well, I'm sure they were doing it to try to rattle me. And then one time, I was interviewing somebody from the Chicago White Sox, and this was in the visitors' locker room at County Stadium. And I didn't know it because, but one of the players started spraying shaving cream on my head, and all of a sudden I could feel something cold on my head, and I kind of reached up. I was like, you know, what the heck is that? And then I look, because there's big mirrors right there. I look, and here's this metallic shaving cream, and I found throughout my career dealing with situations like that, sometimes you just have to have a sense of humor. So I started laughing, and I said, okay, that's real funny. Now somebody give me a towel so I can clean this off. And they laughed, but then they did give me a towel, and they helped me clean off my hair. So I think I earned a little bit of respect, you know, not running out of the locker room crying or something like that.
Or getting angry,
right.
Wow. Did you find in those early days or even later, was there a difference in the way you were treated by players as opposed to, say, coaches and managers?
Well, the players would be a little more jokester types.
Right.
You know, you never really got that from managers. I think with managers and coaches, because I was a woman, that I stood out more than, you know, just another male reporter.
Mm-hmm.
So they did tend to remember, recognize me more.
Mm.
And so in that sense, I think it was an advantage. And obviously, you know, I knew the game, that I understood the game and knew what I was talking about when I was asking questions and that. Mm-hmm. But once I earned their respect, you know, they were good. One of Dick Houser, remember the former Kansas City Royals manager?
Sure.
So we had had some chats before games in the visitors' dugout, and he was just a really nice guy. And for some reason, he always remembered that I covered the University of Wisconsin football as well. And so every time they would come and play the Brewers, and we would talk, he would always want to know what was going on with the Badgers and how were the Badgers going to do. So that was enjoyable to him.
Well, it's quite a challenge, though, to go through that.
Oh, yeah. I said the players were the ones who would, I don't want to say give you a hard time, but you know, try to rattle you a little bit. But
so you never ran into someone, a player who really didn't want to talk to you or gave you that impression or even said something to
well,
that?
there were some players. I never got the impression it was because of, there were some players who didn't want to talk to the media, period. And then there were some players who, you know, were a little more difficult to deal with. I remember an instance where I was interviewing Roger Clemens.
Oh.
And this was before the game in the visitors' locker room. And I started to ask a question, kind of going off on me. And I waited till he was done. And I said, very politely, I said, if you would have let me finish my question, you would have known that what I was asking you was. And then I asked the question in full. And he realized that's not what I what he was reacting to originally was not what I was asking. And he apologized and said, sorry, I, Ooh. You know. Shouldn't have gone off like that. And then he did answer my question. So
you have a sense of how long it was before you felt like you were just one of the media and didn't stand out as a woman?
Ooh. I'm sure it was several years because it was just getting to know people, getting to feel comfortable in that environment. One of my things throughout my assignment, unprepared. So I always made sure that I did my homework. I always made sure that I studied my subjects so that I knew before going in, you know, what I was going to be talking about, what I was going to be asking them, what the situations were. In a situation where they would say something and I would have to respond that, you know, I didn't know what they were talking about. So I think that was a big part of it, was making sure I was prepared, doing my homework and research, and that helped a lot. That made a big difference.
For sure, yeah.
In football, it was a little more rare. Quite a few years, I was literally the only woman in after games and that, and but for the most part, you know, I didn't have problems with the players or coaches covering that. So
so you started at the Journal Times full time in 78.
Correct.
And talk about the transition you made ultimately from beat writer to sports editor. How did that come about?
Well, I actually was named assistant sports editor in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, was getting administrative experience, assisting the sports editor and running the department. We had a 10 person staff. And I took on a lot of these, and so it made it a little bit easier than when he left in 1990. I applied for the job as sports editor, and was promoted. And I've always had good organizational skills, so I think that helped a lot in running a 10-person department and doing all the administrative work. But it was a smaller daily newspaper. I still had to do all the other tasks in addition to being sports editor. So besides having the responsibility of running the sports department, I still was a reporter. I still had to do copy editing. I still did page layouts, on top of all the administrative stuff of budgeting and planning and coordinating with photo assignments, coverage. So I put in a lot of power, but I enjoyed it. I mean, it's how many people say they had their job. And for me, it was my dream job.
Well, that was an historic moment because I don't think I'm mistaken, but weren't you the first female editor at a Wisconsin newspaper?
Yes, for a Wisconsin daily newspaper, I was the first editor and also the first female sports editor among Lee Enterprises newspapers, which was the company that owned the Racine Journal Times and also owned papers across the country. So.
Wow. So how did you juggle between being all those administrative details you had to attend to and still being basically a beat writer, correct?
Yeah, well, like I said, I put in a lot of hours and there were probably a lot of weeks where I worked 7 days a week. But, I loved covering. I didn't want to give that up. And I'm glad I kept that going because I just had so many wonderful experiences and met so many fascinating people through that it was worth it. The hours, that I did what I had to do, but I think I was a good planner, a good organizer, and I had my lists. I knew what I had to get done on a certain day, what I had to get it done by, and I designated my time accordingly to take care of things and make sure everything was on board.
Oh. So in all the years you've been covering sports, was there one sport that you most enjoyed covering?
Oh, it's definitely baseball. I love the game since I was a kid. I liked watching it. I liked going to games. Obviously, when I was a kid, the Braves were nearing the end of their run. And then we had a 5-year gap before the Milwaukee Brewers came in. But my grandpa and my mother passed that on to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandpa used to, he would babysit for me when I was at work. And my grandpa always watched all the Cub games on WGN. That was back when all the games were on TV and they were all day games.
Right.
So I would watch the games with him. Now the funny thing is, my grandpa was not a Cubs fan. He actually hated the Cubs, but he watched all the games so he could watch them lose. So I kind of inherited that from two of them, like, okay, we got to watch the Cubs lose. Then that exposed me to a lot of the other players watching the games on TV. So when I was a kid, Bob Gibson, I think, seeing him, pitching for the Cardinals.
Yeah. So when you think back, are there certain moments, memories, events, or say personalities that really stand out in your mind?
To be covering the Milwaukee Brewers, I guess being in the smaller market because there was intimacy there, and just in general being able to cover major events and meet so many fascinating people. But I'd have to say, my number one seed would still be covering the Brewers in the playoffs in 1982 when they were down, you know, 0-2 against the California Angels in the American League Championship Series. Back then it was best of five. And the Brewers rallied to win three straight games and beat the Angels to win the American League pennant. And then they went on to play the Cardinals in the World Series and made it to the seventh game before losing. But just the excitement of that and the drama involved in that was just so, it's hard to experience because it was just so really brought out everybody in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. And after the so many lean years for the Brewers, it really was kind of a big turning point for them. But also the thing I really liked, the characters on that team and the personalities. There's never really been anything like that since. And just, it was just so much fun. And so, you know, the Paul Molitors, the Red Alex, the Cecil Coopers, the Gorman Thomas, Pete Vukovich, Don Sutton, Raleigh Fingers, Ted Simmons, just so many characters. And it was just so much fun. Then I also got to cover the playoffs in 2008, 2011. And a couple of the other major events that stood out were covering the All-Star game in Milwaukee in 2002, which of course was the infamous game where it ended in a 7-7 tie because both teams ran out of available pitchers. I got to cover Cal Ripken breaking Lou Gehrig's consecutive games played streak in Baltimore in 1995. Oh. And that really, the whole baseball world got caught up in after the stoppage in 1994, and that really brought a lot of people back to the game, getting caught up in that excitement. So that was an experience being there and being covering Robin Yount's chase to 3,000 hits in 1995. I know you were there for that too, and then covering Robin Yount's induction Baseball Hall of Fame in 1999 in Cooperstown. And Yount was inducted along with George Brett, Nolan Ryan, and Orlando Cepeda. And that was fun being there and being a part of that and covering that. That was actually my first trip to Cooperstown, to the Hall of Fame. So I really enjoyed that and been back to the Hall of Fame since then, just to spend time at the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And then one of my specialties from covering University of Wisconsin football, and that was in the 1981, they opened the season by beating Michigan, which was one of the high-ranked teams going into the season. And then they also beat Purdue and Ohio State that year, and that was pretty much unheard of. They had come off of back-to-back 4-7 seasons, and they just went on to win seven games that season. So that was pretty exciting being a part of that.
I bet. Well, I know you've won a number of awards over the course of your career, but I have to imagine that your induction into the Wisconsin Newspaper Association Hall of Fame in 2019 must be at the top of the list. What did that mean to you?
Oh, that was... I remember when I got the call about that, I was just totally caught off guard. I suppose I shouldn't say this, but I didn't even know there was Hall of Fame for that. And then I got the call, and I was in shock. And it was, I mean, recognized by your peers, and then to read the letters of support that people had sent during the nomination process. There's nothing more rewarding than getting that kind of respect from, you know, friends and coworkers and people you had worked with through the years. So yes. that was that was pretty awesome.
Well, it's interesting that today, the day that we're conducting this interview, is the day that the Hall of Fame induction people are going to be acknowledged and announced. And I know that as a member of the Baseball Writers of America Association, you've been a longtime voter for the Baseball Hall of Fame. What has that been like for you?
That is correct. I've been chapter in 1984, and you have to be in 10 years before you can vote for the Hall of Fame. So I started voting 1994 and have voted every year since then. And I considered that probably one of the greatest honors in covering baseball. And it's a privilege, and I take the responsibility seriously. And well, as you know, I have very high standards, and I think that the Hall of Fame should be reserved for the very best in the game, and that I spend literally every year, I spend hours going through and analyzing each candidate on the ballot. And it's, for me, it's always been more than just the stats. And I've always felt you need to look at obviously the stats are a very important element of that and have to receive a great deal of consideration. But I also like to look at consistency, longevity, what did the player contribute to his team? You know, what kind of leadership there was, what impact did the player have on the game? And I take all those things into consideration. I know they say in the voting rules, you know, character is one thing, and that's been something that I have always held in high mark as well. So one thing they my position, and then I go through it. All the other inductees like to go through the list of other inductees at that position. How does this player compare? You know, how does this player compare with his stats, with what he meant, effect he had on the game, and go through, you know, one by one that way. I mean, I have fun with it. It's I love doing the research and the history on that, but I take it very seriously.
Mm-hmm. As you should.
Yes, as you should. As I said, it's a privilege, and I take that responsibility seriously, and think it should be mm-hmm. something you spend time studying and that before you make your votes.
Well, Susan, you've certainly had an interesting and even historic career in sports writing, and it's been a real pleasure to talk to you about it, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.